Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities.
Hey, everyone. This week, we're taking on a different kind of topic than we've talked about before. We're actually going to talk about healthcare and how that impacts our recovery and what kind of what kind of resources are out there, what kind of resources are not out there, unfortunately, and how we deal with that. I can start by saying that for me, healthcare is an important issue that I do speak about a lot. I often speak, as I mentioned, at law firms and other organizations. And the number one thing that people say to me about their frustrations when I talk about breaking stigma and that we need to treat mental health issues the same way we treat physical health issues is that, yeah, you're saying this, but my healthcare doesn't cover my therapist. For example, one of the big things in the legal profession is that the American Bar Association has a task force on attorney well-being, and they came out in a major report and said that to be a good lawyer, one has to be a healthy lawyer. And that means physical health and mental health. And so that is the message that I end up taking around. And I talk frequently about the fact that, you know, I have a mental health disorder. I've been diagnosed with major depressive disorder. Now, if I had diabetes, I would go to a doctor who specialized in diabetes. I would take any medication that that doctor prescribed to me as recommended, and I would.
If you had the health insurance that could allow you
right,
to do this,
right, right. This is the theoretical situation. This is on the stigma point,
yeah.
Which is then, you know, then I would also then I would also need to do certain things like adjustments in my lifestyle, like diet, exercise, and this and that. And so that's for someone who would have diabetes. I have a mental health disorder, and the brain is an organ of the body, the same way the kidney is an organ, the same way the heart is an organ, and I have a chemical imbalance in my brain. So I go to a doctor who specializes in treating such imbalances. I take medication that that doctor prescribes to me, and I take it as prescribed, and I do the lifestyle things that support me keeping that brain disorder in check. You know, I go to meetings, I try to eat well, I sleep well, I'm, you know, I don't drink. So, you know, really these are diseases and disorders of the brain in the same way that, you know, coronary disease is a disease of the heart. So that said, I'm always saying we have to break the stigma because that's the only way we're going to treat these things alike. And then the point that you just made is, Tawny, is exactly right, which is, yeah, but when I go to the doctor for, you know, my diabetes, it's for people who are fortunate enough to have health insurance. It's covered under my plan. But I want to go to a therapist and it is not covered. That person is out of network and I can't. It's going to cost me all this money out of pocket. So now I don't go. So you're not really providing those resources. This is a context that I see it in. And I know it's a very privileged context. But what ends up happening is, at least in the legal profession, somebody doesn't go and take care of themselves proactively or, you know, on a regular basis. And then they end up crashing and burning. And, you know, in the best case scenario, they get into a rehab and get better and spend time off. But so much of that could be prevented if we didn't, you know, if we viewed the two aspects, both physical and mental health, as one and the same.
You're so right. And we can't even talk about preventative care as an option because we're not even able. So many people are unable to get even just like baseline care.
100%.
Like people aren't getting their, you know, biannual teeth cleaning or their annual physical You know, people, a lot of people can't afford that. And a lot of people don't have jobs that have health care. A lot of employers, like big corporations, are making cuts to where people that, you know, they're making, giving people that were full time, cutting them to part time. So mm-hmm. they don't have to provide health insurance. And this is happening all over.
Right.
And so when that, how that affects the recovery community is profound. I mean, imagine how different would your recovery have been if you couldn't go to a detox?
Oh, forget it.
I mean, what would your life have been like if that wasn't an option for you?
I don't think I would have survived. I honestly don't think I would have survived. You know, I went into detox and fortunately I had health insurance and I was able to go that day and get myself in. And I knew that day that I did that, if I had second thoughts, like, man, maybe I won't go, maybe I don't need to, whatever. And I knew that if I did not do it that day, that I was going to lose my nerve and I wouldn't do it. And if I didn't do it, I firmly believe that I would have been, you know, dead long ago. So the fact that I had that kind of access absolutely saved my life. Like, it's not even close. And it would have given me more kind of, you know, well, I'm too far gone and what am I going to do? There's nothing I can really do about it. I can't go get appropriate treatment.
Totally. And even like you are lucky enough to have had the wherewithal to know that rehab was an option for you.
Right.
You knew you had some sort of resources.
Yes.
That, you know, a lot of people don't even, if they're at, you know, living at rock bottom, mm-hmm. they don't even know, they don't have a person to go to get help. They don't know how much money it costs to get help. It's not even like a,
yeah, well, they also don't see a problem coming the same way.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's an education thing that we are fortunate that we've known, we could look at it and go, okay, this is a really big problem. But if it's what you see all around you and it's what's, you know, what's happening, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, you know, aren't in positions where they really see how bad the problem is or have the kind of education to understand, you know, that they are sliding into trouble, you know, especially because we know the nature of addiction, right? Like I would, every time I started drinking more, I would say, I'm drinking more, yeah, but, you know, my life is tough. And yeah, but I can stop if I want to. Yeah, but there's no sort of backstop to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I relate a lot to what you're talking about with like being around certain groups of people because, you know, back in the day, back in my day,
yeah.
You know, you get off your parents' health insurance at 18.
Right.
It's 26 now, mm-hmm. which is, I think it's amazing. But so back in the day at 18, I was off of my mom's health insurance.
Right.
And so it was like, what the fuck? I don't even know how to be an adult, let alone like, what is health insurance? Why should I care about it? Like what, how... I was so confused. I was so lost.
Yeah.
And I was in the customer service industry. I was bartending and waiting tables. So like I was working these jobs where healthcare was just a non-negotiable. Like it's just not like people aren't even talking about it, you know.
And you're surrounded by drinking.
I was surrounded by people that were binge drinking just like me. So the like, you know, there was a couple people that would like leave the circle and go to rehab. Then we would just never hear from them again, because looking back now, I can see they were taking care of themselves and not putting themselves back in that situation. But it was a really scary time to like look at, to think about. I was uncovered for 10 years.
That's amazing.
From 18 to 28. And I wasn't going to the dentist. I was going to Planned Parenthood for birth control, and because I was able to pay based on donations,
mm-hmm.
and that was a huge service for me and people, not just women, men and women and non-binary, anyone who needs any sort of help with yeah. that, Planned Parenthood is there, like, and that right. that was, I owe so much to that, like,
yeah.
I was able to have birth control.
Well, that's a life-saving
without
organization.
Without health insurance. Yeah. Like, that's huge.
Yeah. Just the basic basic health care that it provides for
absolutely.
Women.
Absolutely. I was able to get my pap smears.
Yes.
Mammograms. I had a cancer scare that I was able to take care of all of that through Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And like people don't talk about that part of it.
Right.
About the wonderful care that it really provides. I was able to have a full service colposcopy and gynecological exam because I was able to pay based on donations.
Right.
Whereas if I...
Based on donations, meaning donations to the organization subsidized your care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I donated mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Where like when I would pick up my birth control, they would say, did you want to donate today?
Yeah.
So I would donate what I had. Right. And that made a significant difference in my life, where if I didn't have that, I would have, like, who knows? Like that cancer scare could have turned into something, and I was able to get that resolved.
Right.
You know, like I was able to figure out what it was, get it treated, mm-hmm. and then move mm-hmm. on.
Exactly.
Without monstrous debt.
If you had in those 10 years just like been crossing the street and fallen down on something, fell off a bike or something and broke your arm or broke your leg and had to have an ambulance ride and then an ER visit, you would have been in bankruptcy.
I would be in debt for the rest of my life and filing bankruptcy. Like it's so scary to think about now. Like I was living so dangerously. Those 10 years, I was like super active in my addiction. I was mm-hmm. binge drinking. I was sleeping around. I was traveling, drunk driving. Like I was completely reckless.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I never got hurt.
Yeah.
Nothing ever happened to me.
Yeah.
But I'm very lucky with that because that doesn't happen to a lot of people. I have a lot of friends that, you know, got into car accidents or had to go to the hospital, or even just if anything goes wrong,
yes,
you know, you go to the hospital and you're like five figures in debt.
Yes, going to the ER
just for an ambulance and testing. Like it's very unfortunate how it impacts different communities.
Huge.
And not everyone is able to have a job to provide the health insurance that I'm very lucky that I have right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And oh my God, like my sobriety without therapy, I can't even imagine.
Right.
I'm able to pay a $20 copay to see my therapist once a week. $20.
Yeah, when I was in New York, mine was, we had good insurance, but it was actually high for a law firm's insurance. And my therapist was out of network. And so it was like a small fraction of that got covered. And I know that there were plenty of times where I was like, well, maybe I'll just go, you know, once this month, or maybe I'll just skip, because I was like, it's just a pile of cash out of pocket. And if I feel kind of okay, you know, but I know that one of the primary drivers why I didn't go on I would have loved to have gone on a weekly basis. I'm sure I should have gone on a weekly basis, but I was like, I can get by.
Yeah.
You know, and been fortunate that I have. I mean, I didn't do that at the beginning. You know, in the early days, I was much more, you know, some of it was covered because my health insurance covered my, I didn't go to inpatient, I went, inpatient detox was covered. And then I went to intensive outpatient two nights a week and had therapy in connection with that. And that was covered as well. So that was really good. It was when I got out of all of that after the first year when that ran out or 6 months or whatever it was, and I was going to a therapist, because I constantly hear that the therapy in-network therapists are just not what people need. And that I hear it all the time. I'm not going to a therapist because I don't want to spend $300 a week to, you know, walk in the door and spend 45 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that is a huge element of recovery, particularly when, you know, for someone who is not necessarily doing something like 12-step where you have a group. And that's also, you know, when you look at something like our sponsor Tempest, you know, that is an amazing resource, you know, outside of that.
Amazing, affordable resource that, you know, that wasn't an option when I was getting sober.
No.
It wasn't around when you were getting sober.
And right.
Now there's a lot.
Right.
There's some really, really good stuff out there. And in our episode notes, we will link to this NBC News article that is like, it's called Mental Health Services, How to Get Treatment If You Can't Afford It.
Yeah.
And I learned I learned a lot from this. It's just really like how to navigate that world without insurance and without being able to afford it. And, you know, support groups are such a huge, huge portion of this, where support groups are free.
Yeah.
And you can, and there's support groups for pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're codependent, if you're a sex addict, if you're have
you've
a drinking
got a family
problem,
member or a friend yes, who's struggling.
There's, you know, there's, you know, yeah. gambling, overeating,
yep.
undereating,
marijuana.
There's a group of people that are dealing with this that, and it's free.
Yeah.
And
but part of what's hard, I think, is that, you know, if you're not like if you're Tawny at 20 something, you know, bartending in Texas, you're not, it's not even on your radar. It's
not
until you start to say, I need help.
Totally. Know? And I, you know, when I was in that scene, I knew I needed to change my drinking habits. I knew it. And I would, you know, talk about it with my friends over drinks, of course. And I would be like, you know, I think I should drink less. Like, I'm drinking a lot. And, you know, the hive mind is like, nah.
Yeah,
no, like,
you're fine.
We're bartenders. This is what we do. Like, it's fine. And so, like, I continued to drink like that because the people I was around drank like that and they said it was okay.
Yeah.
And it took me physically getting out of that
yes.
environment and
yeah.
getting, you know, leaving that job,
mm-hmm.
getting a healthier job
mm-hmm.
with health
yeah.
insurance.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And making friends and socializing with people that socializing had nothing to do with booze, to where I could get to that point.
Right.
If I was still a bartender in Waco, Texas, I don't know that I would have woken up.
Right. It's so true. And also, you know, the fact that it's there for, you know, for it was there for me to go get clean, basically, in the because I was in a medicated detox for 5 days, just put me on this path where then, you know, as you are sober and you start to take care of other things, right? Like now I go for a physical, go to the dentist, I get my eyes checked. Like mm-hmm. none of those things are possible for so many people.
Oh my gosh, no.
You know, and that also is like one of these issues where when we're working to stay sober one day at a time, the idea of if I fall off my bike and break my arm today, I could be facing bankruptcy is something that is not good for, you know, for your recovery. It's not, incredibly, it's like a self-perpetuating thing because, you know, the more that concern and fear you have as you get older, especially about things like that, it's scary.
It is scary. And if when you're dealing with, you know, life is hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're dealing with trying to make ends meet, living paycheck to paycheck, you know, daycare, financial stress, paying off your debt. The thought of paying a monthly premium for health insurance doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, why would I pay $500 a month just to have insurance when I still have to meet a $4,000 deductible
exactly.
to even use my insurance?
Right.
That makes no sense to a family that's struggling or a single mom or a single person
right.
that is struggling financially. Why would they go into debt for their health insurance?
Right. Right. And then that's the whole thing about, you know, like the lack of preventative care that then, you know, like I said, somebody ends up not going to a therapist when they really, you know, maybe even would want to be and should be. And then, you know, 3 months later, they just crash out because they're, you know, they something bad happens, right? The event happens. I always say that, you know, you're high functioning until the day you're not.
Yeah.
People refer to me as a high functioning alcoholic. And, you know, I'm high functioning until the day you have a DUI or the day, you know, you miss a court filing or you make a mistake on a deal document or whatever it is, or you sleep through something. And so the idea of like, I can't afford to do this. And then what happens is the inevitable crash happens, and that crash is going to be 8 times as expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, maybe keep you out of work longer and do all of these things.
Well, totally. And even like, you know, if you're not getting your teeth cleaned twice a year.
Right.
Then all these other things are going to go wrong with your teeth. It's that's kind of like you were saying, breaking that stigma, those same issues that are going to be growing in
mm-hmm.
your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the shit that's also growing like with your mental health. If you're in denial
yeah.
that you have cavities the cavities don't go away.
Right,
you
right.
know?
That's so, yeah.
If you're in denial of your anxiety or your depression or whatever you're going through or your addiction, those problems are still going to be there. They're just going to be amplified.
Right.
5 years later, 10 years later, if you're lucky enough to even approach to deal with them, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And I think there is a difference. There's a big focus now, and I also talk about this a lot when I speak, is that, you know, a big focus that organizations are trying to provide for wellness and well-being for their employees. And, you know, that's a great thing that they're focusing on it. But, you know, like I frequently say, you know, it's great that because people in law firms work notoriously huge amounts of hours. You're always in the office. Or if you're not in the office, you're connected 100% of the time.
Mm.
I mean, you've been with me.
I remember
days that we'd be. Yeah, we would be when we were in New York and we would be working on pod episodes. And I was constantly
like every time an episode would end, she's
like
on
immediately
her phone emailing,
like dealing with that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was on the administrative side for most of my career. I switched out of practicing after 6 years. You know, I always say, like, when I speak, like, it's great that you guys are offering, because firms are doing this now, like, it's great that you're offering yoga on Thursday at 5 o'clock in the conference room. But if somebody's like, working, yeah. That's not a well-being program. Like,
no.
To me, what a well-being program is providing the ability for an employee to be in charge of their own well-being. You know, I don't want to go to yoga at 5 o'clock on Thursday in the conference room. I want to go to the class I like on Saturday morning. You know, well, are we going to try and cover that instead? Or are we going to make sure that that time is given to you? Like, how do you make some time sacred? Like, that's, you know, one of the things, like, I always think about that when you read about, like, Google or one of the big tech places where you know, you take your dry cleaning there, you can eat all the meals you want for free in the cafeteria and all of that. And, you know, to me, that doesn't sound so great. Like, I want to have to go home.
Well, they want you.
They
want
you there.
That's how Netflix is, too. Yeah. Like, if you work at Netflix, I have a friend whose partner works for Netflix, and she is on the clock all the time. You're given a free Uber account, a Postmates account, and because they want you, they don't want you underground on the subway.
Oh, my God.
And they don't want you to leave the office for lunch. They want you to they want you to be available to answer phone calls. So you got to be in the Ubers all the time. And you've got to have your lunch delivered.
They really do that? Like,
yes.
You can't go on, like, they don't want you.
No, they
want. You're literally never supposed
to be
disconnected.
You're never off.
Well, that needs an entirely separate well-being program for, like, technology. I mean, because
I know.
Technology, so many people, how many people do you know have technology addiction?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I always say, you know, I always give the example of, like, when I was practicing back in the Stone Age, you know, I might be in the office until midnight, and I frequently was, but when I got home at night, unless you were going to wake me up on my landline at 2 a.m. and tell me to get in the office, which did happen, I was out of there until I got back on my computer at 9 o'clock the next morning. Like, there was that time where I might be thinking about work, I might be stressing about work, I might be whatever, but I wasn't tethered to a device. Now, like, how many lawyers or how many people generally sleep more than arm's distance from their device?
Oh, I do.
I mean, imagine that. Like, you know, and to feel that way, like, to be told basically you are a 24, like, your job is, you know, must be woven into and considered into every moment of every day that you spend is, I think, really dangerous.
These people, it's not sustainable. These people are going to have breakdowns because you can't live like that.
No, you cannot live like that. There are people, you know, I would say there are people who thrive on it, who
they
want it.
They think they do. Like, it's kind of like you're high functioning until you're not. Like, yeah, you thrive in it, but until you're like, oh, holy shit, this is a heart attack.
Right.
Like, those chest pains.
Right,
you know,
right,
like,
of not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
You can ignore that anxiety long enough until it becomes an actual stroke.
Right.
And, like, you got, like.
But do you think there are people who, like some of the lawyers that I know who bill, like, insane amounts of hours, they love it. Like, that is what they're here on this earth for. Like, to do that work and to be part of that whole thing, that is what, you know, and I don't know that it will kill them, but it is, you know, I guess the point would be that it can. Like, if you become a sedentary person who doesn't sleep, who's always connected and everything, there's no way. And it's true. Like, I always say that in the profession, we're expected to, you know, work hard, play hard, always be not just available, but like on a game at all times, and, you know, be totally connected, but not suffer any of the physical or mental health ramifications of living that kind of a life. And yet, like you're saying, it gets to a point and it's gonna snap. Like, there is that is not a long-term strategy.
It's, I mean, we are humans,
right?
Like, what we're talking about, this is like the work for machines.
Yeah.
And we're not built for that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I know that, like, because a lot, what I love doing what I do, that it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
But so then that makes burnout harder for me to feel.
Right.
So I don't feel burnout until it's too late and then I have a meltdown.
Yeah.
So I can only speak to my personal experiences,
but
I know that I think I'm thriving until I crash.
Yeah. That's fascinating that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just curious, what got you to where you were researching the article that you're going to post? I'm so glad that you found that link and you're going to put it in the show notes. But what was it that, because you have been, at least since I've known you, right, working with health insurance.
Since you've known me, yeah.
But so that kind of information, were you seeking that out when you were unable to access it because it wasn't available to you financially?
I wasn't, because I had it. I had, like, as long as you've known me, I've had health insurance.
Right. But so what brought you to that article?
That healthcare is something that I'm the most passionate about right now. And so I'm learning about all of this kind of stuff. I want to learn. I'm learning, like, the history of the healthcare system, like why in the United States in the early 1900s, why we went the route of employers providing healthcare plans, when in the EU, it was just like a, it's the complete opposite.
Right.
You know, it's something the government does.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by, I'm wanting to learn the difference, like what was going on in America, where the thought of doing universal healthcare was just like insane. Even in the 1900s, like, and now there's a lot of people that think that's crazy. And so I'm
universal healthcare.
Yeah. Universal healthcare. And so I'm just wanting to learn.
I think that's great.
Learn
that
about,
like,
it. I'm very passionate about it. And it's like kind of like what we're talking about with in our line of work, being advocates for recovery. I mean. We are so fortunate to have had the experiences that we've had. And so, like, how can we provide resources for people that aren't fortunate enough to go to a detox or to go see their therapist every week? What are their resources?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's painful to see, you know, the inadequacy out there.
It is. And, you know, we can only hope that it gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think that, you know, there's so much that can be done, like, on our end, as, like you said, as recovery advocates. I think the biggest thing we can do is bring attention to the issue and talk about, you know, these things, because it is amazing that, because we have grown up so indoctrinated in the fact that, you know, healthcare comes from your work and, you know, that's how you do it, because that's what we've known. That, you know, to ever question, like, well, is it working, is, you know, is a new kind of conversation to me. Like, all through my working career, I never imagined, you know, there would be anything else. But it was a huge factor in why I was always terrified of losing my job.
Well, yeah, the benefits are what keep us in our jobs a lot of the times. I mean, money, of course, but, like, there's lots of ways to make money.
Yeah.
But the benefits that we need to live.
Yeah. And we were talking about this morning that, you know, because we feel that way and other people feel that way, like, I need to stay in my job to keep my insurance, we don't move on to that other thing that maybe we would love to be doing. And when we don't do that, somebody else doesn't have the opportunity to move up into our, you know, job. And, you know, it is a vicious cycle.
It is. I mean, I am completely overqualified for my job, but it provides healthcare for me.
Right.
And it provides me the flexibility to be able to do things like this and write and do public speaking and be an advocate
and
for the recovery community.
And do it with peace of mind because you know that, God forbid, something happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're covered. Yeah, that's
covered.
The thing is, to me, as someone with anxiety, you know, with I've always been like a gloomy, like half glass half full person, like the anxiety would just be overwhelming. It would be very hard for me to stay sober, feeling constantly in that state. I would, you know, and God forbid I couldn't get my medication, you know, that's huge. And be able to go back to the doctor to adjust medication.
Well, and because you are on medication and you see a therapist and you went to rehab, you are able to make more money
100%
as the amazing human that you are now.
No, but even in my old job, I was able to make more money once I got healthier.
Well, totally. Yeah. Like, we're able, because I'm able to take care of my mental and physical health, I'm able to make more money in my jobs.
Like, that's right.
There's like all sorts of things that come from having healthcare.
Yes. And because your health permeates every aspect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been a heavy topic. Let us know your thoughts.
Yes. What do you do if you don't get insurance from your job? Like, what do you do? Or are you in your job because of your health insurance? How does healthcare impact your recovery? Let us know.
Let us know. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara, and you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out, and you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book-selling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.